Welcome to All Analytics Conversations. This is Jim Connolly. I'm editor of allanalytics.com. How many times have you heard that we're facing a shortage of analytics talent, particularly in that role we call data scientist? 50, 100 times in the past few years? Now, we could sit back and bemoan the fact that our analytics initiatives are doomed for lack of talent, or we can do something about it. And doing something about it is what we're discussing today. Many employers are taking action on their own, cross-training experienced business people and IT specialists for data science roles. Then there is the work being done in universities. In fact, we now have 150 U.S. universities offering data science and analytics programs. They not only are grooming young undergrads for analytics careers, but they also are providing proven workers with mid-career options in data science. Those universities often are working with local employers to help shape programs that will better prepare students for roles that employers need. One of the schools that has grown an advanced analytics program is the University of New Hampshire. Our guest today is Robert J. McGrath, who is Director of Graduate Programs in Analytics and Data Science at UNH. Welcome, Bob. How are you today?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you with us. Before we begin the discussion, let me add a note for the listeners. You can post questions for Bob and comments for your peers in the throughout the audience on the live chat box on the All Analytics Streaming audio page. I'll share as many questions as I can with Bob during the live audio session, and then we'll address more during the chat session at the bottom of the hour. So just to get started, Bob, could you give us a quick overview of your approach at UNH and what you feel you're accomplishing?
Sure, Jim, be happy to. So UNH decided to, under some thoughtful leadership, to look at the wave of data science and analytics comprehensively and to say, okay, is this something that is sort of an old wine, new bottle, or is this really a new field? Because there's a lot, we've been doing a lot of things around this campus in various departments that are similar, computer science, math and statistics. So it took a good 2 years to look at the landscape and look to the future, interviewed a bunch of folks and decided, you know, this really is a different field that's going to have a tremendous, profound impact on everything we do here at UNH and all the fields that we touch. And it really does require an interdisciplinary approach. It also requires training at a lot of levels. So what we set out to do was try to meet that, also understanding that this field is going to change, and it's going to change rapidly. I call it, you know, we're living in an age of exponential change, no longer incremental change, which I think we all grew up in, where you had a little bit of time to adapt, albeit that time got shorter and shorter. Well, that's no longer the case. And now you get into the Internet of Things and machine learning, and that's all going to be exponential. And so there's a continuum now of needs relative to how data and society intersect that is going to affect almost every field. And so we've tried to address that. We've got professional development training for those folks who are just new to the field, thinking about perhaps a career change or how it might impact their business. We have certificates we offer, which are shorter term, one in person for those who are new, one online for those who might be in the workforce but need to upgrade their skill set. We have an 11-month master degree program, which is a very intensive program to train people up into the role of data science. And we're developing a doctoral program to really help lead and train the next future of data scientists. Right now, there are no PhDs in data science training data scientists, which is kind of a unique point. There will be, but we'll hope to be part of that conversation. So really, across the lifespan of someone's career and beyond, but also we want to remain a partner. So if someone goes through our master's program, for example, we invite them. If there's a new technique that comes out and we teach it, we invite them to come back and learn about it. So we see it as a partnership to help people grow in their careers.
Now, you talk about, you know, keeping pace with the change. What type of approaches are you using, or you see other universities using, to stay in step with the change and to anticipate, you know, what things, you know, how things have to evolve over the next few years?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because the change is happening all around us. So for a university, typically, that's a unique place. I think historically universities have seen themselves as these stoic, walled institutions that basically graduate people and send them out into the world and say, here, world, I hope this is what you wanted. That's not the case and can't be the case in the future of education. We have to be involved in the world, and that means being involved with the public, being involved with industry from the beginning and creating programs that are reflective of what their needs are. So that means for us, we brought industry in from day one. We have an external advisory board. We ask them regularly, what kinds of challenges are you facing? What are you seeing in terms of the future? What's 5 years out? What's 3 years out? What do we need to be thinking about in terms of our programming? And then also, are there data, are there projects, are there things you're doing that we can train our students with? So when they get out into the workforce, they've got a resume, they've got a proven set of projects, they've got skill sets that are identified, they've been stamped by industry. We've partnered with some good analytic firms such as SAS and others. We've been working with IBM. So they've got some really tangible things the industry recognizes, and they make themselves much more marketable. So I think having, and also having a program that's modular-based. So we don't really teach classes. We teach sort of modules. If you think of it as sort of mini job training modules, much as you get, say, in you think of SAS certifications or something like that, we stack them together around themes. So the data architecture class might have multiple modules, and they'll be taught by a number of professionals either here in the university or from the outside if that skill set is relatively new. So, for example, how do we teach analytics on demand or as a service using a Spark environment or using some form of Juniper Notebook with a Docker environment? Well, that might be somebody who's not nascent to the university, but we want to make sure the students get that, and we'll bring them in for 2 to 3 weeks with a tangible project. So it's that partnership and always staying relevant.
Now, how do you balance the need to teach technology versus teaching business skills and avoid, you know, keeping a balance in terms of vocational training versus the traditional university approach of teaching people how to think?
Right. I think it goes beyond the university approach. So as, you know, as I've talked to industry professionals, and even when we devised our program, we had a handful of questions, first of which being, you know, tell me what you think the top three skills that a data science or an analytic professional ought to have. And I ask this question continually all the time, so I want to see if the answer is changing. And the top three answers I get, which surprised me at first but no longer do, is one, the ability to think. Two, the ability to work in groups. And three, the ability to communicate. And then come the analytic skills. And so when I say, why is that? Their feeling is, you know, we can train up on the analytic skills. That's the easy part. The hard part is getting someone to think. So I think for the nature of this conversation, where, you know, one of the things I've always thought interesting is where are we in sort of this natural evolution of analytic ability? Is it something that's going to catch up and industry will then populate its, you know, analytics departments, or it will take various departments from around its institution and bring them together in some way or whatever configuration they use and get the staff that they're trained up for and get everybody linked to the enterprise and all its strategic intentions and all those kinds of things? Have the hierarchy in place like we exist now and be able to move forward? Or is the nature of change so dramatic that that's a moving target? And the sense I'm getting is that there's two roles that are coming or starting to bifurcate in the field of data science. One is you've got the very computer science-based technical skills that are going to be aligned perhaps more, and every company's different, on the computer science IT side. Because data science does exist somewhere between the business needs and the back-end data collection and storage needs. And so you have this group in the middle whose job it is to take the data, make sure it's in the right place at the right time in the right amount, much like a manufacturing process, create a data product that the end user can then use for the business needs. Now, you need people then who understand the back-end very well. You need to understand how data is collected, stored, retrieved, coded, all those things. You also need to know the process available by which you can pull data out. Is it batched? Is it not batched? Is there a mainframe? Is it a cloud environment? And whatever it is it distributed? But also the business needs. And not only the business needs as they're dictated by the unit down to the analyst, but they have to be able to anticipate the problems. So if they do clearly understand all those things, or their team does, and that's a big if, it doesn't need to be one person, they're going to be much more successful, in, especially in an agile environment where they need to be constantly revisiting these deliverable products as business changes. for the business people. So it's a very fluent and adaptive cycle. It definitely takes people who can think and understand the business, but it also takes people who are very technical. And so I think what we've tried to do is we realize people used to call these people unicorns all the time, right? The Tom Davenport article mentions this, and everybody called them unicorns. Well, our approach is that they're not unicorns. They're really well-put-together teams. So in our program, we will have folks who come from a strong ITCS background, you know, the computer science, information technology. We also have folks who have MBAs and worked in companies for a long time. We will purposely always put those people together on teams so that one teaches the other continually through the process. Now, they won't become experts in the other people's field. They'll start to hear the language, and hopefully they'll become a better team member so that the process of project planning and management and production becomes more holistic, especially as they enter the workplace. And then they can ask the right questions, because as I think somebody had posted a comment about, if you're a data scientist and you don't go into the right organization, you're going to be bored. They're absolutely right. You've got to know what the right environment for you and your skill set and what kind of team you should be on to be the most successful. And so that's the challenge, I think, that both industry and training programs have, is to be thoughtful about that iterative solution and training.
Now, as you're selecting students for your program, and from our earlier discussion, I understand that you have more applications than you could possibly serve. What role does problem solving and curiosity play in your selection of a student? You know, we see it in job descriptions, but it's always down below all the technical certs. And then you hear people talk about what's the ideal data scientist, and they say it's somebody who has a curiosity, somebody who has can solve problems.
Yep.
Does that factor into your selection of students?
You know, it does. I would say it's the main factor. So we're a unique program, and I'll be honest, we got some flack for this, both internally at the university and beyond. We don't take standardized tests, except for international students with a TOEFL, obviously. We don't look for extensive quantitative background. For example, we don't require that you have calculus 1, 2, 3. We don't require. We ask that you've taken a college-level statistics class or the equivalent professional experience. What we do have is a series of questions we ask people that are fairly short answer but open-ended, and we want to understand a couple of things. One, do you understand what data science and analytics is, or can you at least pontificate a bit about what it is and how it's different? Where does it fit into your career path? We don't want people who are just searching for, you know, dollar signs, because obviously these people are in demand right now and hireable. And then we interview every single student we feel meets those initial criteria and sit down and talk to them. And you can gauge someone's curiosity factor there. You know, if they come in with questions, if they come in with excitement, if they come in with wanting to really either do the cool stuff or understand things about society that haven't been able to be answered before, they truly understand the nature of how the society is changing, those are the kind of people we want. The people that come in and, you know, give the rote answers on the entrance exams, probably not so much. So for us, curiosity factor is probably the number one component.
Now, there's a question on the chat board here that actually plays into something I was just thinking about, and that is, if you think of back to the McKinsey study from 5 years ago when they said, you know, they forecast the shortage of data scientists. At the same time, they said there's going to be an even bigger shortage of managers who are schooled in the use of analytics and data in their decision making, you know, business managers. How can the universities address that shortage and make sure that we have enough managers out there who are advocates for data science?
That's a top of mind question that we're grappling with right now. There's probably a couple of reasons for it, but I think the response to it, and it's absolutely right. We held a panel over the summer here to say, with some deans of business schools and others, and including our own, to say, what are we doing strategically to take the nature of data-driven information decision-making and put it into the strategic planning MBA content process? So it's not that we're going to teach our MBA, and here's the IT department, and here's some BI, and here's how it fits in. That's the old model. It's how does information from top to bottom now drive an institution to different strategic objectives? And that's a fundamentally different question, and it gets to the differences in how we manage our business. So, you know, agile versus waterfall versus some new, you know, combination of how we get, what the nature of our business is, how does it affect our decision making, how do you make decision making in a real-time environment, how do you change your strategy in a very fast-paced environment. And so as we talk to industry, they're doing this all the time. They're, you know, one of our partners is a large insurance company, and they want to do real-time analytics to do, you know, individually priced insurance products based on your behavior that week. To do this, they're looking at innovation spin-offs, and I think a lot of companies are doing that. That's a different strategic approach that you're not going to learn about in an MBA program. And so as a university, we've got to really blend those two. And that's something we're starting to do, is think about how you turn that curriculum upside down. Where that lies, I think it's a combination of the two. So we certainly teach it within the context of our analytics program, but we're not an MBA. We'll teach around the project. We'll teach those skills. The MBA programs also have to do, I think, similar things where they're teaching information-driven strategy. So that's the piece I think that's still largely missing in some places. I know there's a handful of universities where we're all having this question, how do you fundamentally change that? But I think that's where it lies, is that the world is different, and it's information-driven, not information-responsive.
Could you walk me through a little bit about your relationship with, you know, companies like that insurance company? What's the actual, you know, I don't want to say day-to-day, but whether it's week-to-week, whatever, relationship in terms of how they help shape your curriculum, how they work with your students, or in how you may help the students identify where they want to work, and then, you know, maybe groom their education along those lines?
Yeah, that's a great question, because analytics and data science is in every industry, right? So I think the best thing we can do for our students is exposure. So during the course of the 11 months they're here, once and sometimes twice a week, we book out someone to come in, or we'll go somewhere. Typically they'll come here from various sectors just to hear about how their organization is approaching analytics and data science, you know, the kinds of things they've done, what they're thinking about in the future. The goal is for the student, number one, to maybe hear about something they didn't realize they might be interested in. Two, to get a connection that might become a project they could work on. And then three, to get a sense of the right kind of questions to ask when they do enter the job workforce. I mean, these students, as they come into our program, and I'm not kidding, will start being recruited probably within the first 12 weeks, because these companies have such a shortage. So the students feel a pressure, you know, where do I want to go? How do I want to apply myself? What kind of field do I want to be in? The more that we can do for them, the better. And the other side of it is that we're always looking for project partners. So we've created a number of different ways to do that. We have a five-week project we do over the summer. We call it a boot camp that the students are about to present this week on. So their stress level is high, and they really enjoy that part. It's clean data. It's really to get them exposed to just sort of the methods. And then in the fall and spring, we do a seven-month-long practicum where the students will engage with someone at a company within a specific, in a team, on a project. That could be an iterative project where they come up with a series of questions that evolve over time, or it could be a long-term project. And if the company is local enough, we'll certainly allow the students to go on site and get a sense for how the data science team works and how that information flows through the organization. They learn project management. They link it to strategy. They have certainly deliverables along the way, and we keep them on task with that. And then the third option we've just recently started to flesh out is more of a responsive, we're calling it the data lab, where we take students, and it's not just our students. We'll bring in students from computer science and statistics, usually doctoral students, for work on a client project that might either extend beyond the time period we have or be supplemental too. So company has something really cool they want to do. Sure, we'll work on that in this sort of learning environment, as long as they know it's for education purposes first. So we give them a lot of options to intersect with us, given where the landscape is right now. They're very anxious to do that. Some companies will come to us and say, hey, here's a problem we tackled. See if you can do better. It's a way for them to try out the talent, to get a sense of the students, to see what they're capable of. Sometimes they'll have a wish list, and this is most often the case, because they're a small company or they're a medium-sized company, but their analytic skills, they're either buying them from a Gartner or somewhere like that, or they're just now investing in them. They come to us and say, could you help us think about what are the possibilities? And it's probably the thing we hear most. They're not even sure what this field is or how to do it and what it entails, and so they can't build the process. So by looking at giving us the projects and looking at what the students come up with, the light bulbs start to go off for them, and that's where the value chain really starts to accelerate. The danger, of course, is that now we're starting to get more requests than we can actually fulfill, which I think a lot of programs are in that place. But it's a good problem to have, and we want to be as responsive to industry as possible because I think, number one, it only benefits the students. The more contact they get, the more experience they get, the more comfortable they get doing data science as well as learning about it, the better. So I think that's a key for people who are looking for programs out there. I mean, really look at the extent to which they'll actually be doing the data science, not just hearing about it and learning about it, which is also good. You got to be doing it. You have to be doing it in a real environment for it to really add value, I think, to the way you can sell yourself as a future employee and ultimately be happy as a future employee, because that's the goal.
Now, it sounds like there are a couple of chicken and egg problems here. One, what you mentioned earlier was the lack of PhD leaders to lead a PhD data science program. The other is what you just touched on, which is companies that want to do analytics, but they don't know how to do it. They don't have any experience. How quickly do both of those problems start to show some progress in terms of solutions?
It's interesting. Different industries, I think, have responded differently, and I think different companies within those industries have responded differently. So you have your data nascent companies like your Amazons and your eBays and your Googles and now your Pinterest and all those who are, by the nature of their business model, dependent on data science. They have had people for a long time. Now you're starting to get other companies that are getting very active in those roles, largely around large consumer bases like Coca-Cola, Home Depot, FedEx, UPS. They've been in that space now for a few years, and they're starting to get a little more organized. We're seeing companies like Ford, for example, who are investing large amounts of money in their ability to leverage the data that their vehicles produce, so much that it's changing their fundamental business strategy. Now you have other industries that have always been sort of big data focused, but not as perhaps assertive in this space, so largely for security and privacy reasons, healthcare being one of them. They're highly regulated, patient privacy and security, so they've had very federated systems that have been closed systems. They don't talk to each other. That's still the case. I think finance to some degree is in that area, and then certainly national defense and others. And you have these medium-sized companies who simply just can't afford it, right? So they're all moving, I think, at different paces. A lot of them have let's sort of wait and see. I think a lot of people are also looking, it depends on what your needs are. So they're looking to the analytics as a service platforms. You know, what's AWS going to be able to provide me? Amazon Web Services going to be able to provide me from an analytics plug-and-play platform? And frankly, maybe there's 60%, 70% of their solutions can be found in there. I think the other is, what's the need for competitive advantage in my field? So if you're in a field where it's customer focus, and insurance is a great example, there's only so many people in the world to insure, and the pie has been divided up pretty succinctly. So, you know, you're not going to get a lot of – there's no new markets necessarily to go into. People are born, certainly, and people die, but then you have a static population base. So your only way to get new customers is by – getting them from somebody else, and so you have to do something better, faster, more efficient. There's a lot of entities like that. There's a lot of fields like that. So your ability to leverage data and data science becomes huge, and you might invest a lot more in it. So if I'm an insurance provider and I have somebody on the phone who's calling about something, and I can, in real time, take a look at their risk predictive score, look at their profile, I can see what the kinds of things they've done, and I can better match a better insurance product at a right price to their behavior, I might be more likely to bring that customer over. So it depends, I think, but I still think we're still in a bit of infancy about where all this is going, because the technology is still moving much faster than businesses' ability to absorb it. And I think that'll probably always be the case. businesses are by nature slow. They have processes in place. They have agreements with vendors. They have contracts, and they can't move at the speed at which machine learning, for example, can move, or new technology platforms can move. And so, and then the other aspect of it is the human aspect, which I talk to our students quite a bit about. At the end of the day, everything we do in data science still has to come down to a human factor. So we take that waterfall of data, we put it through a process, be that a business or a public process or whatever it is. But at the end of the day, it's got to affect the behavior change, and that's an individual human-based response to it. So I give the example of if I'm a state health department and I have put sensors around all of our state parks to look at, you know, bacteria in the water, and I get a ton of daily data, you know, that might be great, but if I don't change the behavior of the people going to the park, it doesn't really matter much. And so we have all these other aspects of data science that I think are totally underexplored. One is the human interaction with information. It's part psychometric, but it's part engineering, and it's part psychobehavioral. Do I respond better to an app, to a website, to a billboard sign, to a interactive three-dimensional environment? And those probably change. And the other is the piece I think we've ignored highly is data policy. So issues around data governance, issues around who owns data. There's a conversation that we've not had, and that comes up all the time, certainly with WikiLeaks and other things. Nobody's really having that conversation about who owns our data, and that'll be a profound conversation. And there's a whole field of study that needs to happen under there, the ethics of data transfer and ownership. We're just sort of in the process of doing right now and do more and do better. At some point, though, I think we're going to have to step back and say, okay, this is a real human exercise. What are the ethical implications? What are the business implications? What are the personal implications? And let's get to work on those. And that's a slightly different skill set. So I think for people who are interested in what's the future of data science, there's a lot of things that need to fill in behind where we've gone so far. I don't think we're sort of, you know, people have jumped 10 years down the road to say, oh, machines are going to take over everything. I really don't think that's the case. It's still a human endeavor, and we're going to need a lot of human skills to interpret and use it.
Now, this final question, we're actually approaching the very bottom of the hour here, but final question for me is, what kind of advice do you have for an employer out there, a hiring manager, on how they can work with their local universities and or universities, community colleges, whatever? How can they get involved in helping to groom tomorrow's, you know, analytics professionals and data scientists?
Yeah, I think number one, just do it. The one thing we have found success in with our employers, and I think they've been struggling with for the last few years, as industry moved very fast, data moved very fast, they found themselves creating these training programs, which is not in their core competency. It's not what they do. But they did it because universities weren't responding. What I would suggest for them to do is find a partner who's responsive. And that, you're right, it might be a community college, it might be whomever, but have a conversation and say, what are you doing in this area? How can we partner together? Could you create perhaps some training that would be very specific to our needs if we agree on some level to populate it? Or can we support you with a scholarship perhaps, or even just data projects and being on your board and helping govern the direction? I think that goes a long way. The key, though, is to find areas where you can be very flexible and form a partnership that's going to be a win-win. We try to do that with our employers. But universities, our job is to garner new knowledge, to leverage technology, and to train. And that's, if we can do that to support both industries and publics, then everybody's going to win. So hopefully industry will, you know, not just sit back and say, gee, I wish there was more people on the job market or on Monster.com that had these criteria that I need. Go to the university and say, hey, how do I get these criteria that I need? And I bet you someone at that university, if they're smart enough, will listen and you can have a good conversation.
Yeah, I will point out as we wrap up that, you know, we discussed, you know, the McKinsey study from 5 years ago saying that there would be a great shortage of data scientists and also, you know, data savvy business managers by 2018. That's only less than 8 months away.
Yeah.
So if people aren't acting now, they might want to get going before they reach that crunch point, assuming that it does happen that way.
I don't know if that's the right number, but it's, I think it's a big one.
Yeah. Hey, I want to thank Bob McGrath, Director of Graduate Data Science and Analytics Programs at University of New Hampshire, for being with us today. Bob, this has been great. And thanks to everybody in the audience for joining us and to SAS for sponsoring this event. Bob, thanks for sharing your experience. And everyone, Bob will be joining us on the chat board in a few minutes. There are a couple of good questions that we didn't get to. This has been Jim Connolly for All Analytics Radio and UBM Tech. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. And, Bob, have a great day.
Thanks for having me. Had a great time, and I look forward to some questions on the board.
Thanks.